And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning. It's good to have you on board. Thanks for all your comments coming in so far this morning. Hi, Greg. Regarding the story about the 50,000 apartments delayed in Dublin by builders holding the state to ransom. Firstly, we don't have enough builders in the country to build the level of social housing at the rate required to deal with the crisis. I was told, and I can't remember who told me, I think it might have been Deputy Piers Doherty. I don't want to wrongly attribute that to anyone. That actually there are builders. I'm not saying there's not enough, but that construction companies are actually laying people off. A colleague goes on to say it would make absolute sense for the government to come to an agreement with China, who during COVID built hospitals in weeks, whereby we contract with Chinese building firms to take on the work. The workers are given work visas for the term of the project and seen as international postings, i.e. paid through the home company in China as at Chinese rates. The state could offer a bonus rate higher than the workers would receive in China to incentivize workers to come. The workers' food and accommodation as well as an allowance is paid on top of their wage. This would resolve the issue of a lack of builders, reduce building costs, and I've no doubt make the Irish builders think twice about holding the state to ransom if indeed that's what they're doing. I'm not really sure that would fit with procurement. It seems like a good idea on the face of it. It seems anti-EU in the way tendering has to be done, but I'm not sure about that. Wonderful to get a windfall for sports on Love Donegal Day. Must be the most generous financial support since we had a Minister for Sport in Donegal. And I think it's actually the highest ever. Question for Greg. Do we know the name of the company that built the bike shed? It's probably out there somewhere. I can try and dig that out for you. Greg, you'll probably dismiss this comment as irrelevant, but the parallel between the suffering and killing in Gaza and other places by war and the killing of babies by abortion is being ignored. When the humanity of the child in the womb doesn't matter, so it follows that no one lives matter. When good people do nothing and close their eyes and ears to the horrors of the present day killing, then of course evil thrives and grows. And I think this might be the same person who I read their comments every single time, but they generally seem to start with me being dismissive of the comment as irrelevant. Of course not. I've just read it. That's your point of view and you're perfectly entitled to it. Greg, sports capital funding is a specific fund for sport and recreation. It's not funding that can be diverted elsewhere. Let's face it, health is a bottomless pit due to mismanagement. To the begrudgers, are they volunteers for the local clubs? Do they be outselling lottos every week just to keep the club in operation? Do they think we want to be outselling tickets? No, we're doing it in a voluntary basis, providing facilities for kids and adults and do amazing work in it. And can I just say, by the way, I've received zero comments, and if I read them out in a way that it sounded like this, I apologise. I've read zero comments that believe the Sports Capital Grants money should be spent elsewhere. The only comments I've read is from people who've been campaigning for funding for a while, and they're saying, this is great, it's good, we'll benefit from this, but we're still waiting for funding for our cause. So I don't think anyone has been disrespectful to the fantastic work of volunteers and others within sports clubs. Just a couple of comments stating that this is great, but, you know, what about us? Funding for sports clubs, trying to buy votes so that Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael can get our young people to sign up to NATO is quite the link. But it has to be said, though, I mean, obviously this is money that's been allocated from those parties, but people from all different political backgrounds will benefit from it as well. And you can expect to see generous announcements in the run-up to a budget, and I think all parties will end up in the same boat. Gregory has once more demonstrated his inability to appreciate other people's views and focuses more on his own personal views. When will he accept that he is there to present a radio show in an unbiased fashion and not to take advantage of being the host of a popular radio station to promote his own views over the views of the very people who are the lifeline of Highland? Now, I'm not really quite sure specifically what that relates to, so if you want to text back, I would be very grateful. I'm here to spark conversation, play devil's advocate, and move conversation around. I am not necessarily bound to sit here saying nothing either, by the way, but it's not a platform I use for any particular reason. But there you go, I appreciate it. But as I say, if you want to text back and let me know as to what directly you're referring to, I'd greatly appreciate it. We're joined on the programme by the Minister of State with responsibility for credit unions, financial services and insurance, Minister Neil Richmond. Good morning to you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Right. Some developments in terms of how credit unions operate or what they can do for their members. What's changed?
So I'm announcing today that as of we are introducing phase three of the Credit Union Amendment Act. Now, what that means, Greg, is that credit unions will now be able to refer their members onto other credit unions if they don't offer a product. So say if a credit union doesn't offer the Cultivate Ag loan or doesn't offer mortgages, they can refer them onto another credit union, their member onto another credit union. But equally as part of that, the second aspect is that they'll be able to syndicate the loans, so spread out the debt. And the third part is that the boards of credit unions, rather than having to do up their policy document for 1 year, will be able to do it every 3 years. And the final thing I'm announcing is that this year the government is setting the Credit Institution Resolution Fund levy to 0%.
What does it mean that one credit union can refer to another? Is this not bypassing, because that sounds like wrong, but is this to do with membership? In other words, if I'm a member of a specific credit union that doesn't offer that service, why could I not have already gone to another credit union? And pardon my ignorance on this, Minister.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Greg. Well, the credit union is a membership body, so you're a member of your credit union, and a credit union is defined by what's known as a common bond. So if it's a credit union that serves Letterkenny and surrounding areas, it would have to take members who live within that area, or it could be the other form of credit union might be for the teachers union or the HSE or the civil service. But if you happen to live maybe in Guido or somewhere like that, but your credit union is smaller and it doesn't offer Cultivate agricultural loans or indeed a mortgage, you can then be referred on to a neighbouring credit union who can offer that loan to you as a member. So it means that if you're a member of one credit union, you should be able to get all the services provided by all credit unions rather than just the ones offered by the one that you're specifically a member of.
And will there be a benefit then for maybe the smaller credit union or the credit union that doesn't offer particular services to be able to sort of refer their clients?
Absolutely, because they'll still be able to refer and hold on to their, they're not clients, they're members. The credit union is a membership body, which makes it very different to other financial institutions. They'll still be able to hold on to their member. The member will still be eligible for a dividend. The member will still leave their savings or anything that they may have on deposit in the credit union. So it's really important that a smaller credit union or a credit union who just doesn't have the capacity to offer a specific product, they're not going to lose their members. Whereby if it was a case where the member goes like, well, I need to get a mortgage, maybe I'll look to move my credit union to my account to a different credit union. Maybe I'll change address or something like that. Or indeed, I'll just use a different financial institution, go to a bank or something else. So this way, it works well for credit unions of all sizes. It increases the level of cooperation and collaboration. And in phase 4 and 5 of the Act, we're actually going to increase the abilities for credit unions to do a lot more together, which is, I think, is really important because the key factor is, Greg, up and down the country, credit unions in so many towns and villages, they're the last financial institution left. For so many people, they're the one place that they can still go into in person, that they can still ring up on the phone. I visited Donegal about 3 months ago. It was one of the first counties I visited, and I met all the credit unions from not just Donegal, but also Derry came across as well. And it was remarkable, particularly, I still remember the meeting in Letterkenny with the manager there, who actually is from my own part of the world, but we were going through how he has officials that know literally the names of the children of their members and are able to talk through maybe if they've got into financial difficulty or maybe they need to know what product they need to help kick on their business or ensure their child's able to go to college.
I presume this is off the back of representations that have been made to you by the sector, but do you, Anne, what's your anticipation in terms of sign up to this? Do you know this? Because this presumably only works, I presume it's an opt-in. You know, if I don't want to mention specific credit unions because we're local here, but say, you know, two neighbouring credit unions, presumably both of them would have to say, right, this is a good idea, this works for us. How big an uptake do you think there might be from institutions to make these services available to the people we're talking to today?
Well, I think this will fill in a lot of the gaps that are out there. This is, as I said, the third part of a Credit Union Amendment Act that was introduced a couple of years ago. And this act is in response to what the sector, what the movement has asked for. And as I said, I've visited most counties in the country at this stage and had credit union roundtables over the last 6 months since I was appointed to this position. And in every single meeting I had, be it the one in Letterkenny or in Cavan Town or way down in Killarney last week, was credit unions asking. They want to do more. They want to work more closely together. Credit unions of all sizes, both ones based on a geographic common bond and others on a professional one. They want to do more for their members. And this is what we're doing. We're responding to the sector by enabling them to do more. For the first time since the last couple of years, more credit unions are now offering mortgages. We've seen a 56% increase in take-up of those mortgages. So there's an appetite there from consumers, from members, but equally there's an appetite from credit unions of all sizes. And we're very keen from government to champion the credit union sector, as it is the most trusted brand for a reason for the last 2 years. We want to make sure people know that it's there, and we're working with the sector to allow it to do more for them.
And it's probably more relevant to credit unions themselves, but what is the significance of setting the resolution fund levy at 0%? I think for us average Joes, we perhaps weren't aware of such a levy, but what will the benefits be of that? And is it primarily to the credit unions and their overheads, etc.?
Well, the credit unions, as I said, it's a membership body, so the board will benefit, the members will benefit, the staff will benefit. Basically, credit unions don't have to pay anything into the central fund this year, so they're able to keep that money in their own credit union for use in loans or in products for their members. We have a fund that is a legacy of the crash. We've reached its capacity, so there's no point us taking more money off the credit unions themselves if we don't need to.
All right, one final question, if you don't mind, on insurance. It's a basic enough one, but it comes into shows like this every day. Minister, as I'm sure you're aware, people are frustrated that they're, and if this is indeed your responsibility, that the renewals are coming through and they're going up and up and up. Some people it's up 50 quid, some people it's up 300 or 400 quid. Now, some of that can be mitigated against by shopping around, but not all of it. Why are we continuing to seemingly see insurance levies increase when there have been promises that we'd see them go down and other measures introduced to sort of try and ensure that happens?
Well, we're not continuing to see, because it's important to state that over, if we compare it, say, to 5-10 years ago, motor insurance in particular has come down drastically overall. But I'm not going to deny, in the last 12 months, we have seen an uptick. Very clear reasons for that in terms of inflation costs. The state of cars, if someone's driving an electric car, it just simply costs more to repair than a car would have cost 5 years ago. But we have introduced widespread reforms that have worked in terms of overall, whereas our insurance over the last decade has come down by 10%, motor insurance in Northern Ireland and in GB has gone up by 17% in the same period, which is a crucial thing to remember. And we also have insurance available to businesses now that you simply wouldn't be able to get that 3 years ago. But we continue to implement our reforms, and 95% right there. I've had 23 different meetings with the major insurance companies since I've taken office. We'll continue to engage with them fully to make sure that there are competitive premiums out there as possible, that the reforms are implemented, and we see more and more people going through the Injuries Resolution Board than perhaps the courts. But the more we increase that,
that's not really changing much, is it? The most recent figures I saw, it was like a difference of between 300 in terms of payouts, through the Injuries Resolution Board as not through it.
Well, it is changing, because if you're going to the Injuries Resolution Board, you're saving up. There's no legal fees. There's none of the medical fees that you'd see if it goes to the court system. So whilst the payout figure is generally, about the same, which is what you'd expect, the costs to go through that route are so much lower. So therefore, that doesn't have the knock-on effect on premiums. But it's worth noting that the average motor insurance renewal now is still about €100 less than it was 5 years ago. We're committed to make sure that people feel that, and we're committed to make sure, only in the last couple of months, myself and Helen McEntee introduced new provisions for the Gardaí to make sure that we really tackle the fact that 12% of drivers on our roads, the second highest in the EU, are uninsured. If we bring that down even further, it'll lower the accidents, it'll lower premiums.
I think it's just having trust in the industry to pass on those savings finally, Minister, in that, I think what irks people most is, we can talk about inflation and where prices were at one point versus now, and definitely went down from 19 to 22. We're starting to see them creep up again, it seems. But, and you reference inflation, and that's fine, and you're not a spokesperson from the industry, but we, on a very basic level, what we see is us struggling and our costs going up. But even though it's inflationary pressures, we're seeing record profits and huge profits with insurance companies, and that's a a circle that consumers find difficult to square.
Yeah, and I understand that. And again, I'm not a spokesperson from the industry, but I do dig into the figures and I see that the profits aren't related to motor insurance. And in fact, actually one insurer, the latest to announce the results, have shown that they didn't make profits last year. So they are delayed. So I think, but absolutely, I meet the representative body. I meet each of the nine insurers on a quarterly basis. And what I'm really working with colleagues is to bring in even more choice to the market. Just 2 months ago, we brought out insurance in a new motor insurance provider from South Africa. And the more competition we have in the market, the more it will force them to reduce their premiums and react to the needs of the consumer. And we're working on that.
The consumer's role in this, and it's not the consumer's role in this, is shopping around, though, because that's where they feel the competition. All right, then, listen, thanks very much. That's Minister of State with responsibility for credit unions, financial services and insurance, Minister Neil Richmond there. But as I say, you have to shop around, because if you don't, you know, you have that brand loyalty, your premiums stay high, and why do they have to compete with other insurers if you're prepared to pay the higher insurance rate just because you like the company? Of course, today is Love Donegal Day. If you're on social media, take some pictures of our beautiful county, some of the beautiful scenery, or whatever it might be, tell a tale, anything at all that you think people right around the world would love to hear about Donegal, and use the hashtag Love Donegal or hashtag Dunanal Abu across all of your social media. The hashtags work. And what this means is that it starts trending and then people keep clicking in or tend to click in. And it just either tells people about Donegal for the first time and, hey, they might visit and spend their hard-earned money here. But also, too, for our friends and family abroad, and they could be abroad many generations, it's an opportunity for them to be reminded how beautiful their home county is. So if you're on social media today, let's get Love Donegal trending. Use the hashtag Love Donegal or hashtag Dunanal Abu. We're going to be going around our beautiful county throughout the course of today on John's show and on David's show and also on this show. So before 11 o'clock, we're going to be crossing to what is seen as the most beautiful airport in terms of landing in the world. And who would argue it's Donegal Airport? Bringing superb access to the region for many and also right in the heart of the Wild Atlantic Way. So we're going to be crossing over to Donegal Airport as part of Love Donegal Day in association with Donegal County Council before 11 o'clock. So what can you tweet about? It's quite simple. You can tweet about visiting, travelling and exploring Donegal. You can tweet about the people of Donegal. You can tweet about, when I say tweet, you know, posts, X's, whatever they're called, about our landscapes, our coastlines, our islands, our landmarks and scenery of Donegal. And I defy anyone, and also music, you know, music and arts. I defy anyone who has a phone and has used the camera not to have in their gallery a beautiful picture that captures some element of Donegal, be it the people, the culture, the scenery, the businesses, whatever it might be. So get posting on your favourite platform, hashtag Dunanal Abu, hashtag Love Donegal, either or both. Welcome back. A caller says, I got my insurance renewal in the post last week. I was able to get €125 taken off when I went into the local post office, which is good. Anytime you're saving money is good, isn't it? I've ordered from a company in England called Photobox. They've no contact details. I've dealt with them lots with no problems. I ordered 2 photo boxes on Sunday the 1st and they haven't come yet. I was wondering if anyone else has experienced delays with items from England recently. Right, okay. Now, you would have heard that a number of families who lost loved ones in the Chrysler tragedy, the explosion, have called for a public inquiry to be set up. A lawyer representing the families of 7 of the 10 victims of the tragedy in October 2022 has written to Justice Minister Helen McEntee seeking an independent investigation. They've also requested a meeting with the ministers. The minister, Dara Mackin, is a solicitor with Phoenix Law and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Dara.
Good morning, Greg. How are you keeping?
I'm doing good. So how long has this sort of been in the works, so to speak? And how did you come to have contact with families of the 7 deceased?
So a number of weeks back, we were contacted by one of the families to ask if we would assist following the Stardust verdict. Having met with one of the families, it became clear that a number of other families also wish to pursue a similar line of investigation, and that resulted in then the joint instruction to request an independent human rights complaint investigation from the minister.
And tell us exactly, I know you've just outlined it there, more of what you're seeking from the minister.
So, unfortunately, tragedy of this kind isn't new. And when we see a tragedy of this scale, a state ordinarily responds by ensuring that all lessons are learned and that the truth is uncovered as quickly as feasibly possible. We've seen it in situations such as, the most obvious example is the recent Grenfell tragedy, where the then Prime Minister made clear very early on that a complex criminal investigation such as that would take many years, but what was a priority is ensuring that in the meantime, the families got truth, they got answers, and indeed that lessons could be learned so that the wider public could learn lessons from the tragedy. And Creaslock is no different, indeed, it's all fours, in that lessons need to be learned. These families need answers. Many wouldn't believe that, as it stands, that these families haven't even had confirmation as to the ignition source. They haven't seen any expert reports. And it's indeed an obligation on the state to ensure that those kind of answers are provided to the families, because until you're provided with that kind of information, how can these families grieve for their loved ones?
Would it be unusual for the type of investigation or inquest that you're calling from to happen before, you know, the Garda investigation concludes, for an example?
No, in fact, it's entirely orthodox. I give the example of Grenfell, where the criminal investigation happened in parallel. A second example, you know, in recent times, we've seen the Bill Keneally Commission of Investigation in Dublin, chaired by Mr. Justice White, where alongside the investigation into the various failings, the criminal investigation continued. And there's a very, very important reason for that. The criminal investigation, the Garda investigation, is limited in scope. It exclusively focuses on criminal responsibility and to ascertain whether any criminal offences have occurred. The Garda can't be criticised for that, but that is not the end of the matter. There are many other questions, there are many other facts that the families would like to know, and indeed the families are entitled to know. And most importantly, at the outcome of a criminal investigation, there may be a criminal trial, there may be a conviction, or there may not be. But the reality is that doesn't produce any lessons. That doesn't ensure that lessons are learned, and indeed if there have been failings, steps can be taken to remedy those failings to ensure that this never happens again.
And what areas would that deal with? Is it, you know, what may have led to it? Does it deal with, or would it deal with, you know, the initial search and recovery? And would it deal with anything after the fact? I mean, obviously, that would all have to be decided, the scope of such a of such an inquiry. But what would your gut tell you would be required?
So you're absolutely right, Greg. That would be part of what the terms of reference would deal with. It sets the scope. But, you know, on a very broad brush, one can see the obvious lines of investigation. You know, could this have been prevented? How did this occur? How do we ensure this doesn't happen again? You know, there are the kind of things that a public inquiry, you know, or indeed what a human rights complaint investigation requires, and that it's done, you know, where possible in public, and it's done to ensure that the various documents, the various materials, are provided to the families so that they can effectively participate to ensure that their questions can be answered. Because, as we all know, when there is tragedy like this, there tends to be rumour and suspicion. And it's really important that in cases like this, that rumour and suspicion is assuaged so that the families can grieve and that the truth is known.
We understand that, unfortunately, history has educated us much to the heartache of many, that these things eventually happen, but the longer it takes and the more they seem to be obstructed or not supported, the more difficult it becomes for those affected by it. Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that. And the reality is that, you know, that is what we need to, that's the lesson we need to learn here. We simply can't wait for a decade or decades down the line to begin an investigation into this terrible, terrible tragedy. The investigation needs to happen now, and it needs to be robust and prompt to ensure these families get the answers they need so they can grieve for their loved ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's have a quick listen to Tánaiste Ó Micheál Martin. He was asked about this, of course. It's not that he's opposed to an inquiry, but he seems to think that now is not the time while investigations are ongoing. It's just a short clip.
It terrible tragedy. It does need the fullest of examinations, but I'd like to see the outcome of the reports that are currently and the investigations, the outcome of those, bring them to a conclusion, and then to see whether we could proceed to an inquiry.
Have you any sympathy, Dara, to his view that we wait to the for the outcome of the reports and the investigation before discussing an inquiry? I know you've referenced this, but just having heard his comments directly there.
No, unfortunately, I have zero sympathy for that position. I don't think it I think it dissolves upon reality. You know, there's no basis for saying he'd simply like to wait until the outcome of a criminal investigation. There's no reason or rationale for that approach, and indeed, that doesn't grapple with the reasons that we've put forward as to why we can't wait. And indeed, I think that my position will be more akin to the Taoiseach's position, who has already publicly said that the families have legitimate questions and they need answers. So I think that's more in line with the approach that ought to be taken here. These families have got questions. These families are entitled to answers. And that's what we say the correct response from the state should be.
Yeah, and Leona's mother, Donna Harper, outlined that a little earlier too.
We're all calling for a public inquiry because we just want to get to the truth as to what happened to our loved ones. It's 2 years now on the 7th of October, and we don't know anything or we don't know what's going on. So as a family and as a group, we decided to call for this public inquiry, and I think we deserve it.
And just to make sure everyone understands, Dara, what we're talking about, would some of the answers, or not all of the answers maybe, that Donna and the others seek not be found in the Garda investigation?
No. Let's look at the Garda investigation and the potential outcomes. Firstly, the Garda investigation may conclude that there should be no charges brought, at which stage the families will be provided with no documents and no answers. Two, the Garda investigation could result in a prosecution or maybe even a criminal trial. That criminal trial would exclusively focus on the criminal responsibility of the accused perpetrator. It wouldn't deal with questions such as preventability. It wouldn't deal with questions such as what the rumour was in the weeks prior to this this atrocity. It wouldn't deal with the concerns that people have about, well, this could, you know, steps could have been taken to make the premises safer at a much earlier stage. Mm-hmm. You know, these are questions that simply won't be part and parcel of that kind of investigation. And they're the kind of questions that these families have, and they're the kind of questions that ought to be answered. And we must remember that we're in a situation now, almost 2 years on, where the families haven't even been given the source of the ignition. Many people have suspicions, but it shouldn't be for these families to have their own suspicions. Mm. It shouldn't be for these families to try and conduct their own investigations in the local area. It should be for an independent forum to investigate so that answers are provided.
Given the extent of the tragedy, just looking on how some things are progressing, others aren't, it all sometimes seems a little out of order, if the truth be told, and I'm trying to put myself in the position of one that was who was bereaved. There's no alternative motive to this question, it's simply a question. Finally, Dara, you're working with families of seven of the 10 victims. Are you open to working with the other three, or have they decided not to enter into this process? Everyone will have their own views and grieve their own way, and they're perfectly entitled to do so. But do you anticipate representing more families?
Well, as a solicitor, we are instructed. It's not that we can effectively seek instructions. We've been instructed by an eighth family, so of course we remain open to working with any family who's bereaved.
All right, just to clarify, can we update our information now? You're now representing eight of the 10 victims, families of eight of the 10
That's
victims
right.
now.
Right.
Okay. Right, Dara, thanks for that. We'll touch base again. Obviously, an awful lot of interest because it's the local community, but the wider community. There's so many people affected by this, and we'll be very keen to see how it progresses. Lots of unanswered questions. Dara, thanks for your time. Dara Macken, solicitor for Phoenix Law. And as you've heard there now, Phoenix Law, and through Dara, is now instructed and is representing eight families of the 10 victims there. And I can see on my screen here that the weather is beautiful in the west of the county, and it's all part of Love Donegal Day. It's in association with Donegal County Council. We're encouraging you to use the hashtags Love Donegal, hashtag Dunanal Abu, across your social media posts. Our Corinne Temple is out and about for Love Donegal Day today in association with our friends at Donegal County Council. Corinne, good morning to you. And I suppose just recap, I suppose, what this day is all about.
Morning, Greg. Well, as you said, it's Love Donegal Day. So it's all about Donegal, what we have here and what's to love about the place. And what better place to start in today than Donegal Airport here in Carrickfinn. I drove over from Balfe this morning, drove through Dunloe, and doesn't matter how many times you drive that road, the scenery is just amazing. So we've arrived here now, sun's shining, and we have Brendan O'Brien here, and he is head of air traffic control here at the airport. We're actually in the control tower here this morning, so we've got a different view of the airport.
Very exclusive access altogether.
We have access all areas, that's right.
Indeed, very good.
So I'll hand you over to Brendan now, and he'll just talk to you about what he does here and the airport and love Donegal.
Yeah, Brendan, good morning to you. I mean, listen, if we love Donegal, we love Donegal Airport. It is just one of the jewels in our crown. It's great to see it recognised, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's great. And especially in a morning like this, we're looking out the window, plenty of sunshine, and then just looking out, there's a rainbow rising up there from Critch Island. So it's a fabulous part of the county and the whole county. And I know it's Love Donegal Day. As I said, the girls, I love Donegal every day of the year. So, yeah.
What's your favourite part of Donegal, Brendan?
Well, I'd have to say Glantan Glasgow Door is my favourite spot. Walking along the beach there, Tramore, which I walked nearly every evening. So, yeah, I love it.
We often talk about the scheduled flights, and we will. But is there much private traffic at the airport that you have to coordinate and what have you, Brendan?
Yeah, I would have a mixture of general aviation between flight training schools and just people visiting the area. There were a number of years there we got the most scenic approach, so that brought a lot of people from especially the UK over to have a look at the area, what the talk was all about. So, and they were all really impressed with the approach here, with the islands, the sandy beaches, and then the sort of the welcome they got, and when they sort of went and stayed in local hotels and pubs and the reception and the friendliness of the people.
Yeah, I've often feel like the runway at Donegal Airport's almost like a red carpet. You know, it's a fantastic start to a night out because if you haven't visited the area before and you're flying in there for the first time and generally get down below cloud or if there's no cloud, and we've already referenced it being recognised on an international scale, there is nothing like it. And what a way to kick off a visit to our beautiful region.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. It's been out there. It's both approaches there. We have two approaches there, one from the south and one from the north. Like especially the one from the north, you're coming over Bloody Foreland there, and you have the ruggedness and then the water breaking on the shores, and then you start hitting the sandy beaches, and then probably off to your right-hand side, you have Gull Island, Innisfree, Innisbawn, all Ellen Bawnham. So it's a fabulous approach for them to see.
And how busy is your job? I mean, obviously, you know, it's very busy all the time. Don't get me wrong, I know that. But people would know, you know, Dublin Airport, you know, Heathrow and all these different types of airports. And there's many staff there. But you still have a lot to coordinate, don't you? And there's a great deal of responsibility, isn't there, in keeping, you know, private traffic or commercial traffic away from, you know, passenger traffic too, especially maybe if there has to be a fly around or what have you. You know, there's an awful lot of responsibility and a lot for you to coordinate there. Brendan?
Yeah, around Donegal Airport here, we have a 10 nautical mile radius up to 5,000 feet. So that's our general area of responsibility. But traffic is normally handed over to us at 20 nautical miles, the scheduled traffic. So we'll be coordinating the between the commercial and the general aviation. Especially when you get good weather and at weekends, you have a lot more sort of general aviation activity if the weather's good and your flight training schools. Plus then you have the military and the search and rescue operation. So, yeah, we're kept going then. But more so now, it's more paperwork and more from the safety
aspect.
It's
always the way now, isn't it? Till we get AI to get rid of you.
That'll be the next.
Me and you, we'll be sunning ourselves. And one final question, Brendan, got nothing to do with Love Donegal Day as such, but also to how big of an issue now is it keeping an eye out for the likes of drones? I know there's a no-flying zone there now, but not everyone knows about that, and these drones are really quite accessible and probably a potential bane in your side, you know, when dealing with traffic. Do they register on your equipment, and has it been much of a problem in the past?
I know it's probably over the years, like we've had a sort of general campaign there, awareness, especially around Christmas time, about the usage of drones around the airport. And we've just implemented our drone incident management at the aerodrome there back in March. So that was in conjunction with, the Irish Aviation Authority and the Garda Síochána. So we have a system in place. There's a portal there where drone operators are registered and they can just request like a flight plan or permission to fly the drone. And so we can look at each application separately, and if we can allow them to fly, we generally allow them to fly because like at the weekend, there's a wedding on the area, so they have an application in to use the drone. So it's subject to traffic at the time.
Great stuff. Okay. Listen, brilliant stuff. You love Donegal. I love Donegal. Thanks so much, Brendan. Really appreciate it. And Corinne, I know you're visiting a number of places today. And if we're talking about loving Donegal, you'd have to start at the Donegal Airport. It's a lovely place to be, isn't it? And a fantastic welcome to those visiting our region.
Oh, definitely. As I said, even the drive over this morning. So there's no better place to start. And we are heading now to New Mills after this, and we're going to be at the New Mills Corn and Flax Mill. So again, we're going to have a lovely drive over there, and after that we head down to Swan Park and Buncrana. So we've a lot of road to cover in Donegal today, and we're going to capture bits along the way, so stay tuned to our socials. And again, we'll be coming in to John and around the northwest, and again to David on the Jive Time, just sharing all the great places here in Donegal and why we love them. And if anyone today is listening, just use the hashtag Love Donegal or hashtag Donegalaboo and share your pictures, your stories, and just get the word out there.
Yeah, and tag us in. I'm sure we can share them too. It's all about using all of our social medias right across all various platforms to spread the love of Donegal. And also, I think it's nice what happens here as well. People, as I mentioned earlier on, that no longer live here or moved away, they get to sort of be reminded of the beauty we have here. And they may fly in and see our good friend Brendan in the not too distant future. That's what it's all about. Brendan, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thank you so very much indeed. And great to understand a little bit of the work that you do. Corinne, thanks as always. So you and Anya, where are you off to next? You're off to New Mills, did you say?
So we're off to New Mills. We're at the New Mills Corn and Flax Mill. So we can't wait to hear all about the flax mill there and the work that they do and the guided tours. So as I say, stay tuned to hear all about it.
Yeah, and every time you stop and see something, every time you see something that's picture worthy and stop and take a picture and hashtag it, you might not be there till tomorrow. But anyway, that's such is the beauty of our county.
We have a tight schedule, but we'll get in as much as we can.
All right, lovely stuff. Thanks very much. I really appreciate it. Okay, that was our own Corinne Temple there. And we also had Brendan Buell there as well. Great to speak to him, head of air traffic control at the airport. Haven't spoken to him before. Find that all that work fascinating. So great to get an insight into that. So take your pictures. I've got pictures of, I was at the weekend, we went out for something to eat on Sunday, went into a bar, and there was just a traditional session there, but there was also other artists that had joined and took a picture, and it was just, you know, it sort of encaptured for me genuine, you know, the culture and artistry of Donegal. I'm going to post that picture later on because I think that encaptures why we love Donegal. Hashtag love Donegal, Donegalaboo. Maybe you've taken a great picture at a football match. You know what I mean? Maybe it's just that last minute score, that picture. Post that. That's about loving Donegal and our culture. Hashtag Donegal, hashtag Donegalaboo. And on it goes. Your imagination is your only limitation there. And it works, you know, because we had a lovely trip out to Tory Island earlier in the summer. And I try and promote it as much as I can. So I made a wee TikTok of Tory Island and didn't think anything of it until today, because a listener has just messaged in and said, "Hi, Greg, your TikTok vlog of Tory Island made me visit the island. Donegalaboo." Wow, brilliant stuff. Thank you. I didn't even think on that happening. So that's brilliant. Well done. Must do more of that if it actually has an impact. Right. OK, a quick query before we take a break. DM Waste are not collecting... This came in from a listener. DM Waste are not collecting bins in Rosemount in Letterkenny. We've been advised to move the bins so they can collect them. Some residents are unable to move their bins as they've got back problems. This is a health and safety issue. Can you please get in contact with them and help resolve this issue? So we did, of course, get in with DM Waste, and fair play to the company. They got back to us as well. And it reads as follows. We are aware of the situation, have spoken to this particular resident, and we have explained to them that on each occasion we've tried to gain access, but there are cars parked and blocking the lorry. The lorry is normally in that area at 7 a.m. as it's very busy during the day for the lorry to get down the main street and turn into Rosemont. We've been servicing that area at the same time each week for over 15 years and never had an issue. We did ask this particular residence, as they said they were speaking on behalf of other residents in that area, if the residents could bring their bins to the end of the lane, as this is a short distance, but they refused. This particular resident suggested that we change our collection day, but unfortunately our days and routes cannot be changed as this would disrupt all our customers' collections. So not fully resolved, but hopefully they can work together there and come up with a resolution. Morning, Greg. Good to hear Mary T. Sweeney standing in the general election. Donegal needs a strong woman's voice, unlike the weather-vane politicians who spin and change direction depending on which way the political wind is blowing. With Mary T., what you see is what you get. Hi, Greg. Does anyone know why the Catholic Church are not making much noise about Israel killing innocent people and children? Where would they stop, though? I think, you know, the Pope is showing leadership in that regard and has made really quite strong remarks. And he made really quite strong remarks in relation to the US presidential election race, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And he referred to one of them as the lesser of two evils. I don't want to misquote the pontiff, but I believe he did. So there you have a little bit of leadership. You mean maybe on a local level? Where would that end, though? I don't know. I can't get a date for the NCT till the 30th of November. I feel it's out of our control as drivers if we can't get a date. If you do repairs on your vehicle, then your car is roadworthy. We were talking to about NCT enforcement, and a caller says that, you know, they should deal with the small things too. And this caller says, I agree with you. Texter Gardaí need to enforce the small things for a start. We were also talking about a gap in a school dentist in the west of Donegal, the Falcarra area. A mum was telling us that her daughter needs a filling, but there's no one available to do so, and private practices are packed. Same dentist problems in Bunkranna, I'm told, with my school-going children. So there you have it.